On Sports Part 6, Responses. I was recently asked if I would be willing to debate the cultural value of sports with a sports enthusiast. My response was recorded, and I'll play it in a minute, but as a warning, I do get into religion and talk about autism in sort of an insensitive way. My whole response is sort of drenched in vinegar, so if you're easily offended, i.e. have a fragile sense of self, please stop listening here. But if you do keep listening, realize that when I reference the Rolling Stones, I don't actually like them. I don't like the Stones. The person I was talking to already knew that, so I didn't explain it. But that context is necessary for what I was saying to make any sense. Okay, this.
I actually don't like talking to sports enthusiasts, is almost a euphemism for the real thing, sports lunatics, about their lunacy. Because I don't care. You know, to me it's funny, it's a joke, there's a punchline to be had, and then it often lands well, you know, and I giggle. And they get, like, they clench their fists and get pissed because I'm making fun of something that they cherish. And to me it's just, it's so obviously just a giant, ridiculous joke, like adult sports are. The sports are for kids. I mean, let's be honest here. Little League and these little, I mean, football is just to injure people, but you know, like basketball and baseball, youth leagues, I mean, these matter. You know, this teaches kids sportsmanship. It teaches kids, you know, how to play with others, you know, how to get in shape. Coordination and strategy. There's so many lessons. I mean, just from the work ethic on up, there are so many lessons for kids to learn that youth sports are a great thing and should be promoted, and everyone should play. Everyone should find an outlet, an athletic outlet. And if team sports are not embarrassing for the child to participate in, then that's what an incredible thing to do. And go clear through high school. Wonderful. After high school, recreational sports are great. Like, people should continue to play recreational, you know, join the whatever, pick up basketball games or you know, the beer league softball or something. And it's fun, and it's a healthy, you know, circumstantially healthy outlet for people to, it's a healthier habit than some of the alternatives. But like college sports, totally corrupt. I mean, it's college baseball is fine because there are minor leagues. There are minor leagues that pay. You know, professional teams aren't really drafting out of college baseball. They're sort of into the minor leagues, but they're not going, you know, college baseball into the MLB. Whereas, is there a minor league for football? No. Is there a minor league for basketball? No. Colleges are the minor leagues, and so that's why they just really promote, you know, I mean, there was a time, it was not that long ago, a decade ago or something, when there were only 6 programs, sports programs, in the United States, collegiate sports programs, that earned a profit, that turned in revenue, and the rest lost revenue, and now there's more, but there's not that many, I mean, a dozen or something, maybe in the 20s, I really don't know. But it is today, it is a vast, 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 vast majority, with some additional vasts, you know, tucked in there, of programs that have a net loss of money every year. But like, why do they have, I mean, it's just, really, it's mostly just so that the NBA and the NFL have their minor leagues for free. They don't have to pay anyone. And so it's just this exploitation of athletes. And athletes really, they should be getting paid to be doing what they're doing. And it shouldn't be a scholastic program because they're all idiots. I mean, let's be honest. Like, okay, so I go to UConn, and as you just informed me, UConn won both. I had no idea. But they won both. So UConn is a giant sports school. I think they are one of the very few programs that actually do earn money. And I know how they treat their athletes because I know some of them. Having going there, like there were some of the, one of them was in my program. She ended up going on to her master's. She was the only person to go on to grad school. She waited a couple of years and kind of got her life together first. But they don't go to class. There's a tutoring center that they show up to the day before the test, and they give them all the answers to the test. They don't give them a study guide. They give them the answers to the test. This is coming straight from the athletes. I mean, especially the one in my lab group, I've had the most conversations with her, but she's not the only one. And they just, whenever, it doesn't matter what class it is, do they learn anything? No, they just see the answers and then take the test the next day. They don't go to class, they learn nothing. Now, the rest of the non-student, the non-athlete students, you know, the me's of the world, the you's of the world, we could feel cheated and be like, look, you know, we had to pay our dues here. I was up studying all night for a week to take that test. And nobody gave me the answers. I studied everything. I read the whole book three times, and I got the same grade as the guy who just was given the answers the night before because he's on the football team and knows nothing and can barely put a sentence together. Like, this isn't fair. But actually, you know what? It's not fair to him. I mean, it's plenty fair to you and me because we learn stuff, and that matters. You know, when you're an adult, does it matter how many rushing yards you had as something between an adult and a child? Like, no, nobody cares. When you're applying for a position in like a financial market or something, oh, how many rushing yards did you have?
I don't know who the fuck cares.
Nobody cares. Nobody asks a question. It's, can you put a sentence together? You know, do you have social skills? Do you have some base knowledge of the world and how it works? And the answer to that is no. Like, if you come from like a D1, like a major college sports program, you're an idiot. it's bad. And so, you know, I could feel cheated that I had to put in my dues and work hard compared to the student athletes who got the same degree and did nothing, or were just given the answers before every test, never went to class, and are celebrated. But that celebration stops, and then they're screwed. I mean, they're all pumping gas and digging ditches, and, you know, an eighth of a percent of them are making millions and then going bankrupt within 6 months of the time they retire. And so, like, the professional athletes, they're never taught, you know, life and how to live it. And they're the ones who are cheated here. And so people who kind of cheer on these kind of collegiate and professional, I mean, it's these people who are, they're really the victims when it comes down to it. I used to think, like, oh, these people are making way more money than they deserve. And yeah, of course they are. They're not happy, though. I mean, these people are miserable. They're the ones who are really cheated. But why are we celebrating what they're doing? Why are we celebrating the performance? They're just adults doing a child's game. You know, like, it's adults being paid millions of dollars to do Little League. I'm like, yeah, they're really good at Little League, but, like, maybe I could be incredible at playing Pokemon. You know, it's the same thing. it's a child's activity. The adults, with this very backward set of values and become addicted to, as though it's like a slot machine, or, you know, and it's just, there's something so weird about it. But if I talk to somebody who is a sports, again, is a euphemism to call them an enthusiast, it's a religion, it's a cult, it's something more than enthusiasm. And if I break down their devotion to their cult, I think just get furious. You know, it's the same way as if you go up to somebody who's devoted, a Mormon, you know, they just got back from their mission trip, they've been gone forever, you know, they've forgotten how to speak English because they've been in Kuwait or whatever, they were sent because they don't get to choose where they go and they have to pay for it. There's assistance programs, but that's mostly is coming out of their wallet, and it's, you know, it's been forever converting nobody, and they're, like, so invested, like, I can't have this be for nothing, and they're so invested, and you go tell them that, you know, Joe Smith Jr. was a convicted felon, and he, it's obvious that he just made this shit up, and you go through all the evidence of the book, and it's just, you know, and then it came to pass that this begins every single sentence in the stupid book, and, like, and you break down all the jokes of their religion with facts. You know, you don't break it down with an opinion. You break it down with this series of hilarious facts. I mean, stuff like, you know, the Julian versus the Gregorian calendar, and Joe Smith didn't know which one existed in the time that he was supposedly writing about, and he got the Gregorian calendar kind of implanted into history, and, like, steel he thought it existed. It's just this, like, crazy nonsense. I mean, the whole book is. I read it. It's, the whole thing is just a giant, hilarious joke, and it's worth reading for the comedy, and you'll burn a few calories giggling. It's fun. funny enough to come out of it with, like, an abdominal workout. Like, a great, you know, six-pack abs workout is, like, read the Book of Mormon. But you come out and you make a couple, like, very valid factual points, quote a couple passages, and they get furious. And their fury is not because you're mocking. I mean, if what I was telling them was that, like, you have 35 toes and they're the size of footballs, that wouldn't offend them because it's not true. You know, it's just, okay, you're ridiculous. Yeah. But what if what you say is true, and it's this kind of undeniable truth, you know, you're quoting passages or you have these statistics about football and how ridiculous it is and where it came from and why people, and like, if what you're saying is true, that's what upsets, because people have, their identity has been challenged. You know, their identity is connected to this absurd thing, and when you overturn that, that's when they throw punches. And I eventually realized that this is not a healthy thing to engage in. They get so frustrated, and you know, the root of frustration is not being able to express what you hope to express. You know, if you have a thought, you have an idea, you have a point, you have something you want to get across, and those words aren't coming out in a coherent or persuasive way, frustration is the result. And then people start to have these outbursts of temperament motivated by that frustration. And so you take like a football fan, and these aren't like the brightest people, clearly. And, you know, the average IQ at the, you know, Mega Dome. You take like the IQ there, and then the IQ at the local roller skating rink, or to take random sampling from different, the library, I mean, just any business, any, like, and the IQ will be so significantly different that you can't expect a person arguing in favor of football to avoid frustration, to be able to give all of these coherent thoughts a voice. And so the frustration leads to this temperament, and it is almost like a violent outburst. And so the satisfaction of me, and I like out arguing people. I mean, if there's a pastime that I can look over my shoulder on, like, I had a good time. You know, that's maybe it is arguing, not arguing like angrily, but you know, with a little bit of flavor and giggles. And you can't do that with if you're just destroying someone's identity. And to argue sports with somebody, to me, that's like, if I'm going to play basketball with an autistic kid, like, look, this is so easy for me. You know, nothing has ever been easier than destroying somebody. It'd be harder for me to win a game of basketball against an autistic kid than it would be for me to destroy somebody's personal integrity and devotion and love for the sport of whatever. I mean, it's so easy that it's not even, like, the challenge isn't there. And so then I just spend all my time coming up with new, you know, turns of phrase, little punchlines, and it offends so deeply, and then the effect is not there. The effect of, like, oh, let's have a good time, this will be fun, and we can crack a couple jokes, and it'll be like a little discussion. It's not, the other person just gets violent and angry. And I don't enjoy that, you know. So I've pretty much just stopped ridiculing people for their devotion to adult men playing child's games.
All right, that was the end of my response. The bit about university athletic programs earning profit may be a subject that deserves more attention. I hadn't looked at the stats in a year, so after that conversation, I did. Just skimmed a couple to make sure I wasn't completely off. The six schools bit came from an article I read in a gender studies class back when I was doing my master's. I couldn't find that one, so feel free to disregard it, ignore it, otherwise assume it's not true. But the 2010 NCAA Revenues and Expenses Report covering D1 intercollegiate athletics programs found 14 schools earn a profit. That same report found there to be two sports total that ever earn a profit, which is football and basketball. The best you can hope for from any other sport is the unlikely case that it'll actually break even. But even with football and basketball exclusively, only 57% of those programs ever earn a profit. Collegiate athletics as a whole tends to be a losing venture. In July the 2013, the USA Today published reports from Indiana University's National Sports Journalism Center discussing D1 public schools in 2012, the year before, and they had 228. So out of 228 schools, they found 23 were able to generate enough money to survive on their own. But of those, 16 of them still received subsidies. So there are only 7 departments in the United States that function totally independently and profited. Obviously, there's no shortage of ways to evaluate the stats, the statistics, and not one of them is interesting. I'm sure the stats I just mentioned are misleading by some obscure criteria, you know, or alternate mode of calculation or whatever, and that's fine, I yield. Because the stats themselves don't actually matter here, only the point matters. The point itself is what's correct and interesting. Arguing the statistics is just a way of escaping the point, escaping the actual subject, and I already made that point. After doing so, I was asked about soccer, moving on, the undisputed greatest sport in the world. So I was asked if the world's soccer is better than America's football, if the world's football is better. And I have to give credit to Fred Frank for being the source of some of the punchlines I deliver in my response. This response.
Actually, I don't like soccer. I think the only reason Americans like soccer is because they want to feel worldly. But I can feel worldly in other things. Learn languages. Do something real. Don't just pretend you're a soccer fan. It's like the most boring sport in the world. I mean, just nothing happens the whole game. You don't get to use your hands. this isn't a real sport. Yeah, people have endurance, but why don't you still run a marathon then? If that's what you're testing, it's like, oh no, but the dexterity. Like, you have to use it. You have all these limbs, and you can only use half of them. And there are ties. I mean, you know, in basketball, when you score 100 points, it's unlikely that two teams are going to score the exact same number of points. In soccer, when you score one, you're probably going to end it inside. So they've come up with these attempts at eliminating the tie, and they don't always apply it. But, like, you know, in 2002, the World Cup, they used the golden goal, which is like it's the soccer's soft equivalent of sudden death. The first goal wins, and I think one team won by the golden goal. But, like, you know, Harry Potter was already a thing at that point. Like, Quidditch, people knew what Quidditch was. I mean, college teams were probably, you know, prep enough to have a team. And it sounds remarkably like the golden snitch. You know, you catch the golden snitch and you win. I mean, it's just if soccer is kind of derived from young adult lit, I mean, it doesn't seem like a real sport. I mean, they did give up the golden goal. I mean, I don't think that exists anymore. I really haven't followed it. I have no idea. But I'm pretty sure the golden goal they have yielded sporting vernacular back to the young adult lit demographic. But I just have a hard time taking it all that seriously. And I think they can just still end in a tie. I really don't know because I don't pay attention. But I know they've tried to remedy it, and I don't think it's been successful. And it just depends on what you're playing, and I'm not watching, so I really can't comment. But to me, soccer is just absurd, and the rest of the world just... most of the music that comes out of Central Africa, I don't actually like either. You know, cars that were made in Yugoslavia, like, oh, but these are worldly. Like, the Yugo drove 50 miles and then it stopped working forever. just because something is worldly or foreign or like some sort of alien, you know, to us, like, that doesn't mean it's inherently interesting. You know, I was in Cameroon and the local music was hitting logs. You know, like, give me the Stones. I'll listen to the Stones. Like, this is 100%. I will listen to every song. Put on Wild Horses on repeat for the rest of my life. And I, and the 1,000th play will be better than the first time listening to someone hitting a log with a stick. Just because something is foreign doesn't make somebody sophisticated in appreciating it. It means that somebody is counterfeiting this social esteem by pretending I'm worldly, and that's annoying. And if you're a giant soccer fan in the U.S., that's really all you're doing, because it's not a good sport. it's again, for kids, totally healthy. I mean, as healthy as anything. Like, oh, let me have you run a 20K, you know, every day at practice while learning dexterity in your gait. Like, that's good. But in terms of sports. Like, I mean, just if you can't, like, use your hands, you know, like, this is, okay, this, it only goes so far. Like, oh, we won 1-0, and we, but we put in a lot of miles. Like, I can't watch that anymore. I can watch NASCAR.
All right, that was the end of my soccer response. And in response to that response, I was asked to comment on NASCAR, and more specifically, what a sport actually is, which I got into in the first segment, but I hadn't recorded that one yet when this conversation was had. And is NASCAR more or less of a sport than yoga competitions? That exact question was asked, followed by a request for me to define what a sport is and what makes them popular. What makes a sport popular? All right, this.
I mean, at least, you know, NASCAR, there is, you know, one can say, like, these are, like, the best drivers in the world, you know, this is like, 20 of them, or so, I don't know, like, 50, I don't know, there are not that many NASCAR drivers, and clearly, just go to the South, there are 200 million people who want to be a NASCAR driver, and there are, like, 50 total in the world. They're clearly very good at driving. I mean, the compliment can be issued, like, NASCAR drivers are the best, well, F1 races, probably, but NASCAR drivers are some of the best people behind a wheel on the planet. That doesn't mean I like their sport. I don't really, I mean, it's, okay, it's a sport because it's competitive and it's racing and stuff, but, okay, so back to the definition of sport. I think, to address what you're saying, like, when it comes to yoga and stuff like that, yoga is pleasing on its own. I don't know why it needs to be elevated to the level of, like, why we need to make everything a competition. Like, the ultimate is music competitions, not just like Battle of the Bands, because that's usually a bunch of terrible underground bands that are competing against each other for nothing, for $500, you know, like, you know, who can cheer the loudest after your song. I mean, this is really silly. But, like, you know, when it's like, you know, if, okay, we're gonna Battle of the Bands, we're gonna put, you know, Mahler's Eighth Symphony against Bach's Toccata and Fugue, send in your votes. No, this is not a chance. Like, these are symphonies that are pleasing on their own. They don't need to be degraded in this way. They don't need to be kind of rendered into kind of food for the competitive class. And so, I mean, almost, you know, jogging is kind of a pleasure of its own. It doesn't really need competition, but it's kind of the original sport. Fighting and running are really like the original sport. So I get a draw and a desire to compete there. But for a sport to be a sport, I think that there needs to be kind of a set of rules and test one's kind of full capacity. And yeah, I mean, that's, I think, why the stadium sports are so successful. I mean, obviously, rugby is way more interesting than football. It's just, it tests athleticism, and there are fewer spectacular events. ESPN coverage would not have the, 20 seconds per game of, like, wow, look at this replay, like, in rugby. But it's a much better sport as far as sports go, as far as the testing the capacity of the how far the human body can go in competition. I think rugby is much better. And so, I mean, to be a sport, I mean, it's something that isn't pleasing on its own. You know, it's my issue with why is poker and card games, you know, this 52 card playing card deck, that kind of like casino card games. Why are these the most boring thing in the world? I can't stand that. Like, well, let's play poker. Like, all right, can you just shoot me in the face? I got a gun and bought bullets and cocked it. Oh, you just please shoot me in the face. You know, if there's not an ante on the table, it's uninteresting. Like, play poker by yourself. You know, I would rather just, like, okay, put me in, like, a Houdini dunk tank full of water, and I'll try to escape without knowing how, and, yeah, I'll probably die. There's a high chance I'll die, but that will be much, I'll have more fun doing that than playing poker. And so if it requires an investment, if it requires an exchange of money or some sort of resources to become interesting, the activity is inherently uninteresting. If it needs that component to interest its participants. I think sports have to be like that. It has to be something that's really not interesting on its own, that requires competition to make it interesting. If it's interesting on its own, if I'm listening to like Dave Brubeck, I don't need that to be competing against somebody. I mean, my pleasure centers are maxed out just by the experience of listening. I don't need money to be risked. I don't need a wager here. I don't need a winner and a loser. The pleasure is already there. But if it lacks that quality, then I think that's grounds for a sport. I think if it's not pleasurable on its own, you know, go to a football stadium and like just run and pass the ball to yourself and tackle the air. That's not fun. So I think that qualifies it as a sport. To me, I haven't really thought it through. So it would take a little bit more time, a little more deliberation to come up with a real definition. But somewhere in there is my definition for what a sport is and isn't. And I think music competitions are not sports. Bodybuilding, I would argue, is not a sport. It's weird. Bodybuilding is just weird. I mean, I did it for years, but it's just bizarre. I don't know. That's kind of an outlier.
All right, that was the end of that response, but I didn't answer the whole question. I didn't answer the second half of the question, which is what I believe makes a sport popular, what contributes to a sport's popularity. So I'm going to do that now, sort of briefly. I mentioned this in the fifth installment, that you need to be able to root for someone. Nobody actually cares. I mean, this is a huge component of what makes a sport popular. Like, nobody cares about the outcome of a bunch of anonymous men competing against each other in anything. Unless you have a wager in place, then it doesn't matter who wins or loses. There's no consequence. You're just watching a bunch of people hustle for a couple hours and then all stop hustling at the same time. It's no more interesting than watching someone's work day. That's the exact same thing. There's nothing exciting about that. It's just a job shadow. And almost every high school in the nation has hated the job shadow, but will happily sit on bleachers. So the ability to line with somebody is obviously important, but I established that in the fifth segment. I'm not going to echo that point anymore. So that part aside, if it weren't for gambling, the only sports that would continue to exist, that wouldn't be counted among the roster of dead sports, are those that are interesting on their own, pleasurable to without having something riding on the outcome. And this sort of pleasure only really seems to happen when there's a star. And Anna Kournikova would even count here, though Andre Agassi probably counts more. Some sort of flair, character, whatever. Nobody cares about boxing anymore because the world has no Mike Tyson in the ring. And how many people cared about golf before Tiger Woods? When Mark McGwire hit 70 home runs, baseball re-entered the geography of sports as a capital city for a while. Usain Bolt got a lot of people excited about sprinting. David Beckham had a huge effect on the viewership of soccer, although if soccer wants to become a tourist city in the U.S., it's going to need a local star. Not just the technical skill, but somebody, some sort of Maguire stat that is being threatened. And so in this regard, I think all sports are born equal. And it seems to me that they really just, to be popular, there just needs to be a star or two and a box score that's conducive to gambling. And I haven't thought about it enough to give a better answer than that. Anyway, after that response, I was asked for closing comments and summarizing remarks about the value of sports and sportsmanship and what it contributes to society and so on. So I didn't respond to any of that. I didn't talk about any of that. And instead I kind of offered an apology for the crassness of my previous responses. So I'm going to close with that segment, close with the apology.
I just wanted to offer something of a not quite apology, but explain or excuse my how harsh I am on sports and its fans. I'm definitely a minority here. America loves sports. That's why billions and billions of dollars are allocated to this class of entertainment almost every day. But it's, being such a minority, most of my friends are sports fans. They're among that class. So while I mock them deeply and I find their the sort of religious devotion to be kind of misaligned and this sort of misspent interest in all of this, that doesn't mean I dislike the person or that I'm a huge asshole who's the hobby equivalent of like a bigot or anything. I have tons of terrible flaws and characteristics and that are worth ridiculing, and everyone alive does, and you know, and people, everyone has their own set of skills and they're really good at things that I'm terrible at. And then one of the things that I'm good at is cutting into people's insecurities with words. I'm not attacking the person. It's not as though I'm saying like, oh, you know, there's a level of retardation for in anyone who. But it's just there's the actual, like, if you just break it down, the direction of devotion here is an absurd one, and I just it's one of my few skills in life to be able to drive the critical knife right into it. And so don't think that I am mocking the person as much as the behavior. And I think that everyone has these flaws. I'm the least appealing person there is. Everyone's unappealing. That's what makes them worth valuing, is their flaws.
CourtneyJensen.com